What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 29th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Eric Fetty, 8.1 innings, 2 earned runs, 7 hits, 0 walks, and 9 strikeouts. What the heck? He did that against the Rays yesterday, and yes, the Rays are not a very good offense right now, but Eric Fetty does get the Cardinals and Rays again, and you should just do that. I don't really think that Eric Fetty is this good, but if you want to treat like a Vargas role after going 11 strikeouts in his last start, yeah, just do it and don't really think much more about it. I think that Fetty is generally more of a control pitcher than he is a stuff pitcher. And his 9 strikeouts here, probably just the Rays being weird and lots of sweepers in the zone and a sinker and cutter were fine. This is not really like the guy, but hey, this is cool. And we move forward with him against the Cardinals and the Rays next. Jose Quintana against the Cardinals, speaking of which, 8 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. He's a quality start, Toby. And that's cool. He gets a raise next, so we're going to go with that, I guess. You know, he could easily repeat it there. You have Tarek Skubal against the Royals. Got the win. Just 4 out of 49 fastball whiffs. It was a good start. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks, and 97 miles per hour on that 4-seamer. But it's just kind of weird that Skubal does this well while not overwhelming with his fastballs like he used to. His changeup is great, and that's a big deal. It's just, I don't know, it's just weird. Skubal has been so strange to me. Kevin Gausman did well. Got the win against the Dodgers. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 0 walks, 5 Ks. Awesome. This is why we start guys like that. I put him in probable start because it was a little strange how he's pitched lately. And honestly, 4 whiffs on his splitter and 4 on his 4-seamer, and that's it for 8 whiffs. Still kind of strange. He does get the Nationals, so we're just going to do that. But we're not quite out of the woods yet on Kevin Gausman. Tanner Houck did well against the Cubs. The Cubs are laboring without Suzuki and Bellinger in that lineup. 6.2 innings of 1 run, 4 hits, 0 walks, 9 strikeouts. We love this. The splitter was really good. The sinker was arm side, and then you have sliders all over the plate in a good way. This is what we want to see from Houck. We just don't want everything over the middle of the plate. I hope it continues to go well for him. Keaton Wynn has gotten some hype lately. We have a really good article on the site about Keaton Wynn. This was against the Pirates. He got the win here. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts against the Pirates. So the thing about Keaton Wynn to me is he throws splitters that are effective. Those are strike pitches and they aren't destroyed. They aren't big whiff pitches and everything else is, his slider is not that great. His 4-seamer and sinker are like 94-ish, 95. They are okay. And it's really that splitter getting all the strikes. And honestly, I could be undervaluing Wynn's ability to replicate that. Because it's strange. You don't really see a strike splitter much. Normally when they are in the zone like that, they are crushed because they are slower and they have the more obvious hump to them. But we'll see if Wynn can continue to do this. He gets the Phillies next. I don't really believe it, but we'll see. Dane Dunning against the Reds got the win. This was a brilliant outing. 5.1 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 10 strikeouts. We saw a golden goal for Dane Dunning in Texas. It wasn't in Cincinnati, in Sin City. 18 whiffs, 39% CSW. Oh man, just under 70 pitches as well. So he gets the Royals next. You have to kind of go after that, right? You have to, I don't know, you run with it after a guy goes 10 strikeouts and a golden goal here. I'm a little surprised that he was removed that early at just under 70 pitches. Whatever. It's fine, and we move on because, I mean, Dane Dunning, we just trust him against the, Royals, and that's that. Lance Lynn against the Mets. Did fine. 5 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 3 walks, 3 Ks. You really were there for the strikeouts. You didn't get them. And then you went for this for maybe a win. You didn't get that. You got 1 run at least with the bad whip. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like Lance Lynn needs to be doing more to earn your trust every day. And it's just not the game that I want to play. Ben Lively against Atlanta. Honestly, did pretty well. 4.1 innings of 1 run, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. He has a lot of extension, and he keeps his 4-seamer upstairs. And that is how he gets it done. It's interesting because we have also seen Lively do really well with his slider. So if Ben Lively is keeping those 4-seamers upstairs at 90-91 and having sliders that are okay, he does get the Angels next. And considering he's done well before, this was Atlanta, and he survived 4.1 innings and 1 run, I guess. There's a chance that this is a decent game against the Angels. That's the best I can give you. Because, I don't know, I think that Ben Lively's not that amazing. And it's very hard to trust a guy at 90-91 unless you're Bailey Ober with an amazing changeup too. Not quite sold, but maybe against the Angels. Hayden Wesneski for the Cubs in the place of Jordan Wicks went to Fenway. 4 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, 3 Ks. Nice to do this in Fenway. There is no Costas. It's a worse offense for the Red Sox. Still impressive. 63 pitches. And I don't think we're going to see the four-seamer return a 38% CSW again. So, not really the thing I want to lean on to. Generally, Wesneski is just more about the big sweeper. 63 pitches here. He's not stretched out. It's just the whole thing. Like, I don't really want to go after Wesneski. Logan Gilbert is looking like an ace. I got to say, 6.1 innings of 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts for Logan Gilbert this year. In this start is amazing. His ERA is 2.03 with a 0.8 whip and a 29% K rate. I was so wrong about Logan Gilbert. I was out on this. And I didn't really believe that he was going to have a good enough command on his four-seamer. And he's really pulling it out. I will mention, it's just a 8.5% swing strike rate right now on his four-seamer. That is Logan Gilbert. It is a high strike rate. His strike minus ICR rate is fine at 54%. It's above average, right? It's like 61 percentile. ICR is lower than what we have seen. It's only at 37.5 after seeing it above 40 consistently. I think that's really helping because his hip per 9, well, that's 5.2 and his BABIP is 196. I don't love quoting those stats just in general, just saying, okay, cool, this is how he's just getting lucky, whatever it is. It's a minus 5 hit luck, so he should have allowed 5 more hits, but even if we do that, he's thrown 40 innings thus far, and Logan Gilbert has allowed how many total hits? We have 11, no, I'm sorry, it is 23 hits, so he threw up to 28. That's still significantly under a 9 hit per 9, right? Even the hip luck saying that, hey, he should have 7 hit per 9, fine. That's still like a 1 whip for Logan Gilbert. Maybe a little bit more ERA. He's obviously pitching well. What is the big difference? I would say it's this new cutter that Logan Gilbert has. It's at 92 miles per hour. It is getting a ton of strikes from 70% strike rate. It is a high ICR at 42%. But it adds something else that I think is helping the four-seamer become a little bit less hittable. It's a little bit more of a surprise, and it's why we have a high 24% cold strike right now on Logan Gilbert's four-seamer. So that is, I think, the big difference maker, and that also then allows the slider to get more whiffs at 21% swing strike rate thus far. There is your Logan Gilbert analysis. I love this. I didn't think he was going to get a cutter, honestly. I've never really seen him suggest that he was going to get one. He has. It's great. And that addition has transformed Logan Gilbert. I don't think he is a command pitcher, though. He is a control pitcher. And that means that he's going to have a low walk rate. So 6% thus far, 5% last year for Logan Gilbert. And I'm a little concerned that the ICR should go up from 37% overall right now. Even though he has that cutter, the cutter itself is allowing hard contact. And the four-seamer is not really that well spotted. So I do think you're going to see more aggression from hitters inside the zone, considering that his cutter and his four-seamer are both around 58% zone rate, and you still have a pretty high 47% zone rate on Gilbert's slider. What about the splitter, you ask? Well, that is a super low 40% strike rate, so it's a really, really bad strike minus ICR rate, just like 37%. I don't think it's that reliable. That said, how he uses that pitch is in two strikes. It's a 60% two strike rate, and its put away rate is kind of a mediocre 24%. So the splitter isn't really doing enough, in my view, for me to say like, oh yeah, that's the big deal. It's this new cutter that is helping out a ton with Logan Gilbert and allowing him to get by without that really good four-seamer location that we would want to really see. And last but not least, on my whole analysis of Logan Gilbert, as far as the expression, or really the elements of these pitches that make them good, it's a 7.7 extension. It's one of the best extensions in the majors, and that means it's 95.7 mile per hour. Four seamer really is more like 98, because it's 99th percentile extension. He doesn't really have a good VAA. It's pretty average at about 1.1. His IVB, his vert, is 15.6. It's really bad extension. So if Logan Gilbert can pull the Bailey Ober and put that thing upstairs properly, oh man, you'd be so, so, so good. All right, that's enough on Logan Gilbert, and I'm going to move on here, and we're going to talk about everybody else from yesterday's game and, of course, tomorrow's starting pitcher rankings after this break. Zach Littell against the White Sox, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, 6 Ks. Yep, pretty much what you're doing. He gets the Mets next. Nothing really to report here. Just kind of throw lots of sliders in the zone as he does. And that's fine. I kind of think of Littell as a Toby. Brandon Pfaadt is someone else I considered as a Toby, but this was 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 11 strikeouts against the Mariners. What? He just missed the Golden Gold himself, one off of the whiffs at 17 instead of 18, and 38% CSW, not 39%. So is this more than a Toby then? I don't know. The thing about Pfaadt is that it's really just a sweeper that is really good, and that's pretty much what this thing was the entire time. He threw in some solid changeups, sure, and some heaters that weren't really taken advantage of, but it's just really only on that sweeper still, and it's what makes me so hesitant to really lean into Brandon Pfaadt. Even with this game, it's still a 4.63 ERA. Yes, he does have a 26% strikeout rate now, but his previous three games have been 4 strikeout, 6 strikeout, 4 strikeout, right? 7 and 6. That's been his season. Then all of a sudden 11, and that's going to change that strikeout rate. Actually, if you look at it on our player pages and you remove yesterday's start, his strikeout rate was just 22%, which is in line with last year's mark. So I don't really feel as if yesterday is this, oh man, brand new thing. His sweeper is going for a 23% swing strike rate at the moment. So Pfaadt does have, of course, that going from him once again. And last year it was at 19%. But really everything else, I mean, is just isn't getting hit as hard as it has in the past. That four-seamer was a 45% ICR last year. This year it's at 39%. So his strike minus ICR rate is way better. He's earning more strikes and just not getting as beat up by them. He's also throwing more sinkers this year. And that's really the biggest difference, I would say, for Brandon Pfaadt. It's only a 35% ICR and even 22% as he really just throws this against right-handers. Now that does bode the question, what do you do against lefties that is just that effective? It's a changeup, and that changeup is not a high enough strike rate, 47% strike rate for Brandon Pfaadt's changeup. So I think there's still that weakness against lefties. The fact that Brandon Pfaadt is doing so well against righties and that sinker is incredibly helpful against it does mean, okay, if you are going against a right-handed heavy lineup, that's awesome. That should work. I do worry still about that sweeper to lefties. It is a 50% ICR rate. Four-seamer is worse against them. Sinker's terrible against it. It's really that changeup that's supposed to be that pitch, and he's not getting enough strikes on that, but he did yesterday, and that was the difference. So sinkers to righties are making it more consistent, I think. It's just about, again, to lefties and really figuring out how Pfaadt is going to attack them effectively. I'm not going to do as many deep dives, I promise. Bryce Elder against the Guardians, 5.1 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 4 walks, and 2 Ks. He is just a win chance, and he didn't get one here, and that's too bad. Would not feel like I need to hold on to Bryce Elder through the Dodgers, because you're obviously not starting him there. Framber Valdez at Colorado, actually at Mexico City, facing the Rockies, which is super high elevation. Of course, I got a text from Jason Collette. If you guys don't know, him and I have a whole thing about Framber Valdez versus Cole Reagans. And he texted me, of course, this 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 6 Ks in like, what, 8,000 feet above sea level? Like, this is ridiculous. This is absurdly higher than Coors. And he did well. And you know what he did? Framber's throwing a new breaking ball. Now, they called it a slider on Savant. I do wonder if that is really the curveball in disguise. This was 3 ticks slower and 10 inches ever extra of vertical break. I don't know if it is the curve or not. I'm still trying to determine that one completely. But I mean, I think so. I think this is like the slider being just a really aggressive one, while the curve is a bigger, like 17 inches of drop as opposed to the 8 of the slider that we saw yesterday. It's awesome. And it was everything inside of this one, and I'm super happy that he has it. Now, is that going to be like what the cutter was last year for Framber Valdez? I hope so. But why didn't you just tell us that you were doing this beforehand? You know, that'd be really cool. And now I'm more in on Framber Valdez. Like, the problem I've always had is against right-handers, he just throws a sinker that is just way too hittable. If he's throwing a slider now that is really good and can go down in back foot, and also, of course, against lefties, like, I mean, you can already destroy lefties with that sinker inside. That mixed with the changeup, just throw fewer sinkers to righties. That's all I want, Framber, please. Jared Jones against the Giants, 5.3 Five innings of 300 runs, six hits, one walk, and three strikeouts. His velocity dwindled as the start went on, which is something he's been doing. By the end of the game, his velocity does go down. However, this one went further down than before. We're talking like 93 and change as opposed to like 95. So I'm getting a little worried. And you throw in the fact that he had bad command. It wasn't a good mound apparently for him. He wasn't really figuring it out. I'm hoping it's just a bad day and it's just whatever and we move on. Obviously, you're not going to do anything. Don't sell high now on this figure. But if you really want to cash in on Jared Jones, you can too. I mean, just rest all your anxiety. But I'm just going to say like, hey, he's going to be okay. I'm going to hope for that. Ryan Yarbrough was opened for by Michael Grove. And Ryan Yarbrough did what he was supposed to do for the Dodgers, except that they just didn't get a win. That's it. He threw four scoreless frames and, you know, that's it. Darcy Groves, because Grove allowed 300 runs and ruined this whole thing. That's why you don't do an opener. Okay. Austin Gomber against the Astros, seven innings, 400 runs, six hits, zero walks, and two strikeouts. Again, in Mexico City against the Astros. Wow, that's pretty dang impressive, Austin Gomber. That's it. That's all I'm going to give him. Just going to give him a nice thumbs up, even though you allowed 400 runs. Michael Wacha against the Tigers. Ugh, 5.2 innings of 400 runs, nine hits, zero walks, and three Ks. Not great. 6/14 curveball strikes are not good. Changeup was fine. It's just the other stuff wasn't, you know? And now he gets the Rangers, and I'm like, I don't really need to hold on to this. Again, Wacha is a Toby. Lugo's looking better, but I mean, as the season goes on, I think both of those are just going to flip-flop for me. Back and forth, just where they are. Andrew Abbott against the Rangers went 5.1 innings of 400 runs, so not great, but six hits, zero walks, seven Ks. You know, you got seven strikeouts, only seven whiffs, though. I'm not really into this, and the Orioles are next, so no thank you. Pablo Lopez, man, oh my gosh. I'm still thinking about Eno bringing up Pablo Lopez during an episode of The Craft 2 weeks ago. And yeah, it's still pretty scary. Five innings, 400 runs, four hits, one walk, and eight strikeouts. So he allowed 300 runs plus for the fourth time in five outings. Not cool. He got a win and five base runners in 8K. So like, this is a high ERA, low whip, and great strikeouts and a win. So like, you're still happy with it. But this was another four-seamer start, and his secondary stuff wasn't there again. And it's just weird. Like, he had bad fastball command, and now he has bad secondary command. And I feel like when things are changing like that, it's more like eventually it settles. And I hope Lopez should be fine, right? Lopez should be fine. Okay. Tobias Myers is someone that I'm keeping an eye on. Five innings, 400 runs, five hits, zero walks, five Ks. So yes, 400 runs because he allowed three long balls. But four-seamer has really good attributes. It is fully intent to be upstairs. It has 19-plus IVB. Actually, after his first start, his PLV on his four-seamer was 615. You do not see 6 on PLV. You see, like, 5.5, and you're like, whoa, 6 is unheard of. That's like DeGrom, okay? So that's absurd. His slider and changeup, I kind of messed him up. His changeup was way in the zone too much. The slider was fine. His cutter does earn strikes and whatnot. Tobias Myers is someone to keep an eye on. He's pitching for the Brewers, if you don't know him. The Brewers don't really have much. And Myers, with his elite IVB, I think is something that you should pay attention to, especially with his ability to actually locate it upstairs consistently. So I would definitely keep an eye on him. Albert Suarez might be out of the rotation now. Four innings, 400 runs, seven hits, one walk, and six strikeouts. 15 whiffs, 33% CSW against the Athletics. And like, this isn't so bad. Like, he's close. He was 11/51 four-seamer whiffs at 95 plus. He threw too many out of the zone upstairs. And then what we see in previous starts is him leaning arm side a ton with his secondaries. But this was a changeup that was just like way over the zone. All right. Means and Bradish are both coming back this week. At least that's the expectation. I don't feel like you need to stash Means. You can if you're really looking for wins and whatnot. And he might just be fine. He might just be like a Toby with wins, and that's enough. For Means, we might see some up and downs there. While Bradish, obviously, I'm really into it. I really hope the slider inch and curveball are acting like they did last year post-injury. That means that Suarez, Kramer, and Irvin are the three that are on the outs. And there's only one spot, really. They could go six-man, which means two. But let's say one person sticks around. Well, Suarez and Irvin don't have options. So they can move to the pen or get released by the team. Meanwhile, Kramer does have an option. Kramer also just went 17 whiffs and looked as good as we've seen all season. So I don't know what they do. I'll say this, it's Sin City next. That is, Suarez would be pitching in Cincinnati and I'm just not going to do that regardless. So I wonder how this shakes up. We'll obviously keep you posted, but right now, yeah, you don't need to hold on to Albert Suarez or Cole Irvin or Dean Kramer. Marcus Stroman against the Brewers, 4 innings, 4 earned runs, 6 hits, 5 walks, and 4 Ks. Honestly, what I say about Stroman is that he's always going to have a sinker. It's about what is the main secondary pitch of the day. He has a lot of options. Cutter, slurve, slider, and a splitter. Yes, you just heard me say slurve. I'm not going to say it again. And the one he leaned into was a slider. Cool, but it was 10 for 25 strikes. What? No, don't do that. Splitter? No, 0 whiffs. Fine. But then the cutter was good enough, and like it should have been the cutter, but I think he figured it out too late. Okay, fine. So just keep going. Patrick Corbin against the Marlins is not throwing his cutter enough. He only threw 5 of them. That's stupid. Reed Demers against the Twins, 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 9 hits, 0 walks, and 3 Ks. This is kind of the fear I had because his command is just not that great. 2 out of 12 whiffs on his slider. Not cool. His overall arsenal was too much over the plate. This is the fear I have with Detmers, is that he has more IVB on his four seam. That's cool. Locate that upstairs. And you gotta have strikes from your other pitches. His changeup can look good at times. His curveball can look good at times. I really haven't seen the slider be the pitch it's supposed to be since the spring. That's when he didn't. Every other year is he had the slider in the spring and then it goes away and then does it come back? So I'm going down on Reed Demers once again. Taijuan Walker against the Padres got the win. 6.1 innings of 6 earned runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Yes, he got the win because Michael King was on their side. 5.1 innings of 6 earned runs. So with Walker, you're not going after this. 91 miles per hour on the fastball. And I really would just be so upset if Taijuan Walker gets more starts in Turnbull after tomorrow's game, doesn't pitch anymore. That would be just so stupid. Michael King against the Phils did not do well. 10 whiffs, 31% CSW. He's allowed 14 runs in 3 of his last 4 outings. I just don't think that Michael King is that guy. I really don't. And I think over time, you're going to love Michael King here. If he gets dropped, I'm 100% picking him up. I'm a longtime believer in what King does with his stuff and also his overall command. I think, honestly, right now, he's just getting more burned than usual. Paul Blackburn against the Orioles didn't do well because it's the Orioles and it's Blackburn. And Ryan Weathers, disappointing start against the Nationals. 4 innings, 6 earned runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 3 Ks. 11 whiffs, 31% CSW. He was good for 3 innings and then ran into trouble in the 4th and the 5th. The arsenal wasn't so bad, but it's really tough to say, like, oh, well, it wasn't that great, but it was the Nationals, and you really want to go after him, but then it's the Oakland Athletics next. I'm okay with that one in a deeper league. 12-teamers in media stream, you could do worse than Ryan Weathers. He'll be in questionable. But I don't really think that Ryan Weathers is that guy for the full season. Looking forward to tomorrow's games. We have Freddy Peralta, Cole Reagans, Logan Webb, and Luis Castillo in that top tier. Probable start is Jose Barrios, Reynaldo Lopez, Spencer Turnbull, Jack Flaherty, Nestor Cortez, and Mackenzie Gore. Really, the only difficult starts here are Nestor Cortez and Mackenzie Gore. I can see them both in questionable start. Nestor Cortez has been going like 6, 7, 8 innings, and goes against the Orioles in Baltimore. I know how good of an offense that is. If you want to play that safe, by all means, still a good win chance. Mackenzie Gore is going against Texas. He also just did really well against the Dodgers, and I like his stuff. And I just feel long-term, Mackenzie Gore is worth it. And if you want to move on from this, I get it. It's up to you. Questionable start here is long and full of terrors. We have John Gray against the Nationals. He has a good slider. That's it. Simeon Woods Richardson is our stream pick against the White Sox. He just did well against the Cry Sox, so hopefully he can do that again. It was fine against the Cry Sox, whatever. Javier Assad is a Toby, and he gets the Mets. That should be okay-ish, I guess. I don't really think that Javier Assad does a whole lot. Mitch Keller against the Athletics. It's a cherry bomb against a bad offense, whatever. Jordan Montgomery against the Dodgers. I don't think that Montgomery's that good, but we, of course, have seen him lock in and do well, and it's the Dodgers. Up to you. Rodery Munoz is an interesting stream against Rocky Road because Munoz throws sinkers, and he got enough of the strike. He had good enough of an arsenal last time I saw him that I think, yeah, he should be fine if he gets a good matchup, and here it is. So I'm curious to see how Munoz does with Luzardo on the mend. Cooper Criswell is going against the Giants, but it's in Fenway. How long is he going to go? If he goes 6 innings, then this should be good, I think. But then again, he is just a sinker sweeper guy, and he's not really that exciting. Kyle Gibson gets the Tigers, but he's kind of matchup agnostic. Good luck. Tyler Anderson gets the Phillies. You have Tyler Alexander against the Brewers. Sean Manaea against the Cubs, Dean Kramer against the Yankees, Landon Knack against the Diamondbacks, and Hunter Brown against the Guardians. All of those are like, I don't know. They can all go six innings, I guess. Save for Landon Knack, who probably shouldn't. But he's a little bit better with his four-seamer slider than the other ones. And it's the Dodgers. He's kind of like Ben Brown in this way. I don't really believe this as a proper starter's repertoire. But he's in a decent opportunity here, so fine. And Hunter Brown, we don't really know what we're going to get. On the Do Not Start 2, you have Ryan Feltner against the Marlins. I know it's the Marlins on the road, and Feltner has some whiffs with a slider, and his four-seamer can be okay at the top of the zone, but there's just not enough really here. Just don't do it. Alex Wood against the Pirates. I mean, he did well against the Yankees, I guess. Michael Soroka against the Twins. He's sinker slider now, and he's not that good. Nick Martinez against the Padres is not throwing enough changeups. But maybe this is a revenge game for him. You have Carlos Carrasco at Houston. No thank you. And Johnny Brito, I don't think, is going to get enough innings in this one to really justify this one, let alone how the performance is going to be. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for supporting this podcast. I'll, of course, have the list later today. Join me on playback.tv at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock. And may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.